I believe I'm live.
Like,
y'all may regret this later.
Like, I think most of the podcasts that that I listen to, at least, I've been half in the bag since May the 3rd. But before we get to that, I should point out that the half-in-the-bag guys were divided over Captain America Civil War, which I just love. And my wife and I were divided over Captain America Civil War. I'm wondering if the podcast is going to be divided over Captain America Civil War.
I'm on the side of not having seen it.
Oh, really?
I enjoyed it. I like the moral questions in it. The idea of, well, is it, you know, do you stand with your friend even if you think your friend's wrong? And then, of course, there is the whole, do we trust the United Nations to tell us what to do? To me, there was two questions on the movie, in the movie. Question one, whether or not to turn the Avengers over to the United Nations. I think it's, in my opinion, it's pretty clear that Stark is wrong on that. I don't want to hand it over to the United Nations. Maybe someone else. But not the United Nations.
I think people's reactions to this movie, you know, like, it does not surprise me in the slightest that Ezra Klein thinks that Stark is right.
Yeah.
And it does not surprise me in the slightest that the half and the bad guy don't see the problem with handing over control of the Avengers to the United Nations. But you don't really need to be able to come up with that argument for yourself, because Steve gives you that argument in the movie.
Yeah.
Although it's not a slam dunk. I mean, one of the things I particularly like about it, and this isn't a spoiler, is that they don't actually answer the question of who was right on, on that question. They just kind of leave it open. They let both sides make honest arguments and leave it open, which was great.
So there was that question, and then there's the Bucky question. And I think Steve was wrong on the Bucky question.
How would you frame the Bucky question? Do you stand by your pal when your pal's doing something wrong?
If you think your pal, committed a horrible crime, if there's a good chance of your pal committing a horrible crime, do you aid your pal in avoiding legitimate authority? Because, you know, it's not like it was, especially at the beginning there, some supervillains who were going after them. It was regular police, you know. And for me, that's a question of, no, you've let the justice system sort that out.
Yeah.
Personally, if I were the justice system in that instance, I would be like, can we hire a guy with a metal arm? Can we send that guy after him?
Yeah, exactly.
He is available for hire. You know,
yeah.
Kids' parties, that kind of thing.
You just got to know the right price.
That's right. Be careful. You know, you don't want to accidentally trigger him. Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. Both Vicky and I walked out of it not really knowing which side we were on, but kind of inclining to think that you probably go with Steve because he's the one who always has clear motives, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she thought that it was one of the worst Marvel movies, and I thought it was the best Marvel movie, period. I loved how it tied together all of these themes and threads that have been running throughout all of the movies. It seemed like the seeds of what was in this have been so scattered throughout all of the movies so far, and so it kind of seemed to be what Tony says in Avengers 2 about it's the end of the path I started this on, more so than Avengers 2.
Yeah.
So I thought it was great, and you should totally see it.
I plan to.
I think you'd enjoy it.
I may go see it again next week, actually. So.
Yeah. Had I known beforehand that the power was going to be out most of the day, I would have gone and seen it.
Hey, the day is young. You know, you may be several more hours without power yet.
Oh, I was watching them, and they're tying off the last few lines now. So, my guess is that because it's late in the day, they'll take a half hour break before they finish the last few lines.
I will say it's certainly a long movie, so you probably don't want to get a drink. I was very glad going into the last 20 minutes that I hadn't had... Well, I'm not talking about this kind of drink, but, you know...
Yeah, it was a longer movie, that is for sure.
You know, we should bring back intermissions. You remember Tora, Tora, Tora? It had like a 15-minute intermission. That's
We're
a good
starting
model.
To get there, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's depending on how these Infinity War movies pan out, I mean, it's just, it's an awfully long time to sit still. And it's just, I don't see, you know, most of these movies have a kind of a structure where you could put in a break in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a cultural resistance. But
do you think they can keep this, Marvel can keep this going?
I keep thinking that it's, the bubble's got to be, I thought that Guardians of the Galaxy would fail. And it, you know, outperformed every expectation. And they just seem to keep finding the winning formula. And the people who have to be most unhappy about that has to be DC. Right? Because you just compare the kind of looming, morose morass that is Batman versus Superman, which is emblematic of everything that's wrong with DC's stuff. Mm-hmm. And then this one, which is, even though it's a very serious movie, is light and fun and enjoyable. Even though DC is crushing it on television, because Arrow is really good, Flash is really good, Supergirl is really good. Mm-hmm. Supergirl is like the anti, it's like the antidote to the Batman versus Superman thing. Mm. And so I don't want to, I wouldn't bet against Marvel. They may be able to keep, I mean, at some point they will, surely we will reach peak Marvel. But it's kind of like we all sat around last year thinking, surely now this is peak Trump.
Oh, God.
You know, surely Marvel won't be able to keep this going into through, you know, Black Panther and Doctor Strange. But you know what? I went in and I saw the Doctor Strange trailer and I hadn't seen it before we went to see this movie. It's like, holy cow, I'm on board for this. So if they're going to fail anywhere, it would be my guess it would have been Doctor Strange, but then that's exactly what I said about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, one of the advantages that Marvel's having is that they set all the movies in the same universe, but they let all the movies have their own tone.
Yes.
And so I think that's one of the things that I really like. At the same time, that's kind of annoying me at the same time, because I feel like these what used to be separate genre movies are only really succeeding if they're also in this superhero movie world. Like, we haven't seen, you know, Winter Soldier was an excellent spy thriller.
Yes.
That isn't made anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's made a movie like that since, like, Carlos the Jackal. Or, you know, any of those numbers of 70s conspiracy theory movies. And, you know, if you tried to make a standalone movie like that, no one would go see it. But everyone's going to go see it because it's Winter Soldier.
Isn't there, I mean, can't you look at that the other way and say that they provide excellent excuses to make genre movies that couldn't otherwise have been made?
Yeah, I guess so. It's like a survival program.
Well, all right, so what other genre movies could we... Maybe this should be a group project. You know, what other genre movies could you not make today, but we could shoehorn into a Marvel movie?
well, a good Western.
Good Western, okay.
You know, cough, cough, a Firefly. but, yeah, you know, you can't... Nowadays, there's been some good Westerns that have made that have been made, but they haven't done well. You know, they've been okay at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
But you take a good Western, put it into a Marvel movie, and that's going to perform well.
I'm having a hard time seeing how that might work. I mean, maybe. Although, speaking of Firefly, you know, Nathan Fillion's not busy anymore since that Castle stuff got cancelled, so, you know.
You know, hope springs eternal.
It really does.
But I don't know. It's just one of these things that the fans have been clamoring for so long. I don't know if it's going to necessarily happen. And, you know, they've managed to kill off, you know, half of the original cast. So.
Well, but in some ways, you know, it would almost be better to do it now than it would have been to do it 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it would almost perforce have to be 15 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know, it would show you how the events of the movie played out over a longer period of time and where these characters have landed,
mm-hmm.
And you know, provide a good kind of excuse for, you know, okay, we're going to get the band back together for something.
Well, here's the other question to that. Do we introduce exactly the same cast minus the people who have died, or do we use the old cast to introduce a new cast?
As long as Han Solo gets killed by the end of the first movie, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, should I spoiler alert that?
Exactly. No, I think we're good.
I think it was. Although, by the way, one of the other trailers on Civil War was Rogue One, about which I am even more excited than I was for Episode 7, because that just looks awesome.
Rogue One, yeah. Speaking of using established board brands to film other movie genres, yeah, Rogue One does look awesome.
Yeah, I am super excited. So, you know, while I am fully on board with SMOD 2016, if it serves his royal purposes, wait until after December 16th, I think it is. That would be just super awesome. A Christmas surprise, maybe. Yeah. It could be a Christmas gift for the whole world.
Yes.
The very last Christmas gift.
Peace on Earth.
Peace on Earth. That's
Pieces
the slogan.
Of Earth. Yeah.
What's that? What's that line from the start of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? There was a horrible sound. There was a horrible silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And SMOD will follow that operating procedure to the letter. It seems like that's becoming a thing now, that people know what that is, which I find delightful.
Yeah, you know.
Given the alternative, being destroyed by a fiery meteor does seem actually quite appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to the politics part, Sam, do you want to talk about the beer we're drinking? Because it's rather special.
It is fairly special. We are drinking Birra Nursia from Italy, the town that's the birthplace of St. Benedict and St. Scholastica. I'm just going to top you off here, Simon. There you go.
Thank you.
This particular beer is brewed by, oddly enough, American monks, who decided that they wanted to follow the rule of Saint Benedict in his ancestral homeland.
And it is extremely delicious. Very, just an excellent beer. And the founder of the monastery has ties here to Indiana, originally being a monk at Saint Minored before getting permission to go over and start the monastery according to stricter observance out there.
It's funny how we continue to keep bouncing. You know, you have a lot of religious orders that were, you know, originally Carmelite, and the Carmelites got too lax, and so you have someone found a breakaway sect that goes back to the original rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of multiplies this way. It's kind of like, wouldn't it just be more efficient if the Benedictines stay faithful and the people who want to become more lax branch off and find their own order?
It's, you know, entropy and all that good stuff.
Yeah. one can infer lessons about that from the current state of the church.
Well, one can infer lessons about that by the current state of everything.
I don't know about y'all, but I'm just pouring beer here.
Yep.
You're just the bartender.
Just pouring the beer.
Yep.
Beautiful port. So, shall we talk about Trump?
Sure. Lead us all.
Well, it's extremely depressing. You know, one of the things that have struck me, I don't know if you guys heard, but Mitt Romney is ending his search for someone to run their protest ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep on coming back to a thought that I had shortly after Trump became the presumptive nominee, that we're living in a time of cowards and knaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone says, yes, somebody should run against Donald Trump and stand up to him. But no one's willing to put their neck out there and run an unsuccessful race.
Well, in part it's because I think it was David French had a post where he talked about the third party option and said that he's really only interested if it can actually accomplish something. And so the dream scenario, I suppose, that they have in mind is that you run some kind of third party, or better yet, you run third and fourth party candidates. So, you know, you run, say you run Rand Paul and talk Bernie into running on the left. Mm-hmm. And the goal would be to throw it into the House, which you've talked about before is just not seen as an acceptable outcome by Americans if they really think about it. But there's at least, you know, that's the House, call that the House of Cards scenario, right? That would be the movie plot version of this year. But I don't think anyone really believes that that's likely to happen, and so they find it difficult to get on board with one of the things that I said in my post about it right out the gate, which is the effect of this is going to be to elect Hillary Clinton president. And we need to not delude ourselves about that. That if we're going to stop him, that means Hillary wins. And if you're not comfortable with that, get on the Trump train now. Or decide that you're going to sit on the sidelines. But any kind of third-party effort is going to have that effect. Because American politics is just zero-sum. Absent something really kooky like the Libertarians nominating someone interesting and them getting, you know, 20% and having like a Perot kind of effect, which could happen. I mean, it's not inconceivable.
I think the Libertarians are going to have a huge bump out of this. But, you know, I'd prefer not to vote for a Libertarian candidate because I'm not a Libertarian.
You know what? I think this borders on political malpractice on Gary Johnson's part, because in a year where a lot of people are looking very seriously at third party options, and might seriously have considered voting for him, he named Bill Weld as his running mate. And so it's like, okay, so you have a whole bunch of pro-life people who are seriously thinking about voting for a third party, and you basically give them the middle finger. You know, Weld, great move, Gary. Now please return to your, you know, pit of obscurity whence you crawled temporarily by circumstance.
Yeah, I was thinking there's two options in terms of a conservative, or at least a third-party candidate. The first option is the quintessential protest candidate, the idea that we're going to nominate someone who's going to just communicate our values, and that way we have a choice to vote for, and that way in the wake of our loss, we can then purge the party and have someone to rally around to rebuild, or go off and found a new party if the Trumpkins keep hold.
And we talked about last time which was the better outcome, and I still agree with you. It's hard to see that happening.
The way I've thought about it is that if Hillary Clinton's elected, yes, it's going to screw up the Supreme Court. But, you know, that unfortunately that happens. But we know how to oppose Hillary Clinton. We know how to deal with your run-of-the-mill Democrat. We don't know how to deal with Donald Trump.
The problem with Hillary Clinton is that she's wrong about some political issues. The problem with Donald Trump is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It's a character thing. Although, I suppose the positive thing that should come out of all this is that it should banish the idea that ad hominem is always a logical fallacy, because sometimes the problem is the man. The problem isn't always the idea. The problem with Trump is that he's a crass, vulgarian degenerate. And you know, he can't be trusted with the nuclear button.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fundamentally,
yeah. I would not trust him with my lawnmower.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to worry about whether he's going to nuke Chicago because someone sends out a laissez-majesté tweet.
I don't want to have to. I worry about the state of our currency enough as it is. I don't need to have the president saying we're going to renegotiate the debt. And then watch as the stock market tumbles and we end up in a banana republic.
Mm-hmm. Although I do love bananas.
Yeah,
I just want to throw
bananas
that out there.
Are lovely. They really are.
Just adding a touch of pathos.
I'm waiting for that global warming so that I can grow those bananas year-round.
But I was thinking the other option is a unity ticket. Now, I haven't heard anyone talk about this.
I'm sure it's crossed Bill Kristol's mind.
Yeah, but, like, you know, if you haven't, you know, everyone has noticed that the Democrats are having their own problems as well. People seem to be trying to – we've got a bunch of historical reenactors taking a reenactment of that Chicago convention on tour. I think that when Hillary Clinton is the nominee, there'll be enough people on the left pissed off enough that they don't want to vote for her.
And surely she's canny enough at this point to see that she has to make him her Veep.
I don't think he'll have it. I don't think he'll have that.
But she at least has to make the offer publicly.
She has already put out feelers about that. She has already indicated that that's something that she would consider.
I mean, the Bernie or bust people, not all of them are serious, but a lot of them are.
Yeah.
Particularly the younger ones.
Yeah, no, I think she'll slap that down. And I mean, even under your rank and file Democrats, though, no one's too enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton.
Right.
I think if we approached a moderate Democrat and teamed them up with a moderate Republican and ran them as a unity ticket, I mean, that could make waves. And if that threw it in the House, you know, if we announced this as basically a caretaker presidency, serve 4 years, resign.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think that could, you know, it's a Hail Mary pass, but if anything's going to win, it'll be something like that.
I have so many questions about that, but start here, which is the same problem that you identified earlier. It's easy to say that in the abstract, and I'm sure this is what Bill Kristol is finding out the hard way, which is who? There has to be a name.
My name for the Democrat is Evan Bayh.
Okay.
Evan Bayh, no longer in office actively, resigned in part because of the way that the Congress was going.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like the nature of Congress under the leadership of Pelosi, from my understanding. And so that's who I would pick to run for as the Democrat.
Could you envision a Coburn buy ticket on the kind of unity thing?
Perhaps, yeah.
I mean, Tom Coburn is the name that has surfaced the most often, mm-hmm. other than Ben Sasse, who has already said he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not surprisingly, because Sasse is at the start of his career, and Coburn's, I mean, I don't want to say he's at the end of his career, but, you know, there are no last acts in American politics, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's an interesting contingency. I mean, the essential gravamen of it would be we have to save America from itself.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We need a reset. give us 4 years. We're not going to make any changes, and then we'll step aside and we'll let you guys think about your actions and try again later.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to put you in the political corner and let you really consider what you've done.
No.
It really is funny. I mean, you said on one of the previous episodes, Sam, that we're in this mess in part because we don't have superdelegates. And I saw someone, our friend Tim, said how they've got to get rid of the superdelegates on the Democratic side and how it's such a problem, such a burden to them, that they have closed primaries and they need to get rid of closed primaries because too many Democrats presumably are voting for Hillary, not for Bernie.
Yeah. Who do you think might have run on a Democratic ticket if it was open primaries with no superdelegates?
Huh.
I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Yeah.
Any names coming to mind, gentlemen? You know, maybe it starts with a T and ends with a rump?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He certainly does end with a rump.
Yeah. I think that whenever Sanders loses the nomination, Trump should approach him for the Veep slot.
See, that's the other unity ticket, and it makes a lot of sense.
That would be the best ticket ever.
It would be
the most terrific ticket that we could imagine.
It'd be huge.
But yeah. Here's the thing. Sean Hannity and Ann Coulter would fall over themselves to say what a brilliant masterstroke this is. And all of the Trumpkins will immediately... I'm sorry, I can't remember who came up with this line, but I just love it. The branch Trumpidians would fall over themselves to explain why this is a perfect choice.
a Trump voter is someone who'd vote for Bernie Sanders, but they're not from Berkeley or Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just don't get on board with the Birkenstocks, they can't do it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're both, I mean, I can totally picture Trump being down with a whole bunch of government regulation and So, you know, democratic socialism.
Why wouldn't he be? Wouldn't his background suggest that he would have any? It's like this preposterous list that, you know, the Trump Supreme Court picks. It's like, oh, please, your staff came up with a list. It's a good list. But, you know, do I believe that that Trump even saw the list? No. Mm-hmm. Do I believe he could name three people off the list if you put a gun to his head? No. Could we put a gun to his head, please? Does he understand why it matters or why these particular people? So, you know, my perennial favorite federal judge is Diane Sykes. I was very happy to see her on the list. But she is the person you would immediately think of if you are in any way conservatively aligned in the legal world. I can't remember her name now, but there was a Michigan Supreme Court judge who clerked for Justice Scalia, so of course she's on the list. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a judge on a state Supreme Court who clerked for our hero. Imagine my shock that a conservative think tank might think to put her on a list of names that Trump's going to stamp. But even if you believe that he actually saw the list of names, and even if you believe he understands its significance, like, he's going to stick to it. I mean, you know, please. He's going to make a deal.
The day after the list was released, Trump indicated that he might not stick to it.
Right.
I mean, it took him no time, zero time, at least in Trump time, it took him no time to manage to start to, you know, sow the seeds of doubt that maybe he might not reliably pick the people that he said he would.
But he will, of course, pick the best people.
Oh,
that one you have his guarantee.
The most magnificent justices you will ever see. Super classy justices.
They're going to bring back the gold. Remember the gold stripes that Rehnquist had on his robe? We're going to bring those back.
We need to bring those back. You know,
make the Chief Justice great again.
Yeah. Make the robes great again. Let's do that. Yeah, I'm just waiting for that to happen right now.
Gold-plated courts.
Yeah. I thought there would be a time in my life when things would happen in politics and I would say, aha, I told you so. And now that time is here, and I'm just really glad that I have beer.
To whom do you want to say, I told you so?
To the people who said, oh, you know, America's not going to go in an authoritarian direction anytime soon. Mm. To the people who said, oh, civil liberties will always be there. We don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. To those people, I say, I told you so. Better luck next time.
Yeah. I mean, what's depressing about it is that it reveals just how many people are. I mean, the problem isn't so much Trump and Sanders as their supporters and their appetites. It tells us that a lot of people we thought were... I mean, you know, this is something that I've been trying to piece together. When the Tea Party happened, I was kind of cautiously supportive because they seemed to be saying the right things, but there was this kind of odd populist tone that I was worried about. And they, you know, they said the right words, things about fiscal conservatism and limited government and constitutionalism and all that kind of stuff. But more and more, you just wonder, I don't know that they ever, well, maybe not all of them, but the people who have gone on to become the Trump people, to the extent that they were involved with that at all, obviously understood it to be something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
They understood it to be less government spending on things that I don't like, rather than less government spending. And in hindsight, the red flag should have been when you started seeing the Tea Party people who had signs about Social Security is not welfare and things like that, which at the time was just jarring, but in hindsight, it's like, oh, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. We're victims of their success. You know, we've gotten the conservative movement managed to get a little bit over half of the country to kind of side with it. And now that's come home to roost.
Well, apparently you only side, not agree with.
Well, I mean...
That's how politics works, yeah. Simon. I don't know if you've been paying attention.
Thank you for that.
I mean, let's face it, politics is a for most people, is about sides, mm-hmm. not about policy analysis, you know, nor about some sort of coherent political philosophy. It's about picking a tribe and showing your loyalty to that tribe and signaling using the right words.
Yeah.
I think tribe is a very good word yeah. for it. There's a very definite tribal feel to it.
What happened was we made the mistake of thinking we were winning the argument. And we haven't been winning the argument. We've just been, at least not intellectually, emotionally, maybe we were winning the argument, and that's what was bringing people on the side. Or the people knew what they didn't like. They didn't like people from D.C.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like liberal professors. They didn't like yuppies. They didn't like, scary people from the cities who were on handouts and stuff like that. They didn't like that. And so we were against all of that, and so that's why they sided with us. And we deluded ourselves into thinking that we were winning the argument, whenever the argument wasn't being made.
I think the other problem that is typically faced by people who are a little more intellectual is that you think the arguments matter.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. I mean, I hate to break it to you, but they really don't.
Mm-hmm.
God, that's a depressing thought.
I'm a philosopher. I like argumentation. I study arguments. I sometimes come up with my own. So I appreciate argumentation. But realistically, when I watch politics, what I see is not people deciding based on effective arguments or looking at evidence. I see them deciding based on who their social group is. I see them deciding on who sends the signals they like to hear. I see them deciding based on who associates with particular cultural trends they like.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a gigantic manifestation of in-group bias.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're really facing here is just normal human cognitive biases.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump has done a fantastic job of taking advantage of those.
You'll be surprised by what a fantastic job he's done.
I wouldn't, actually. If there were anybody in the world who I think could manage to be manipulative and horrifying, it would be Trump. He's the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
I give him that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, kudos to Trump.
Maybe what it's telling us is we didn't understand the tribe structure. You know, the tribe structure that we thought that existed was not the one that actually exists. On both sides. I mean, because one of you said earlier, and this is exactly right, I mean, it really is a dumpster fire on the other side as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we kind of lose track of it because it's such a mess on our side, but the Hillary people and the Bernie people really dislike one another. I have a couple of friends on social media, and it was just a beautiful juxtaposition because their posts landed right next to one another. One of them saying, I don't know any Hillary supporters. I don't understand why any Democrat would be voting for Hillary. And the other one, I don't understand, know any Bernie people. I don't understand why anyone would be voting for Bernie. I mean, there's such a profound division there between these people.
And one of the things I've been thinking about is this a last revolt of white America? Because, you know, I don't know too many, you know, you look at the Bernie Sanders supporters,
mm-hmm.
and they tend to be
overwhelmingly
white. Overwhelmingly, they're either college students or they're union workers.
Or college educated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know a fair number of professors who are actually Hillary supporters because they understand how things work.
Yes, yeah.
Ironically,
the countercultural 60s professors have become the sort of bastion of establishment progressivism. And it's just delightfully hilarious to watch.
They are now the man.
Yeah,
they indeed are. That's exactly what they've become.
And so, yeah, it's just interesting that on both sides you have white America coming out and saying, no, we want to assert our values, whether it's for free college or whether it's for, you know, getting the trade jobs back here. And it's not good. Either way, it's not good. And I don't know if this is if we're seeing the death rattle of white America, or is this just white America saying, you know, we've been playing identity politics with all of these other groups. Now it's our turn to play identity politics.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them not. I would take a long shot bet that there won't be an America in 20 years. I am perfectly happy to talk about the Article 5 threat at this point. And I don't know that if you think about the purpose of a constitution exists in order to provide the rules by which we can all agree to govern ourselves. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know that this country is any longer sufficiently cohesive that it can agree on a single set of rules to govern it as the party currently exists. Mm. I don't think that the people in California are willing to accept the same set of rules as the people in Texas. And I don't know what that means or what triggers it, but if we can't get anything through Congress, and for a variety of reasons, that's probably the case. So, taking this to like term limits, my guess would be that if you asked Americans whether they would support term limits on Congress, you'd probably get unanimous support, like 300 million easily.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people who would vote against would be the members of Congress and their direct families. Cousins, it gets flaky, right? When you have that kind of issue, then it's just like, well, the only way to do that is to go the Article 5 route.
Mm-hmm.
But my objection to the Article 5 route for a number of years has been that that will be the end of America because we can't agree on these rules. It will propose a new constitution that will have a right to abortion or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or a right to life, depending on how the convention shakes out. This will be unacceptable to a good chunk of the country, and so it'll just fall apart. I mean, is that just... I mean, we talked about the House of Cards option. That may be the Victor Von Doom option. I mean, is that something that's... Am I just crazy to think that?
No. Well, what would happen is we'd have a convention and then a plurality would force its will down the throats of everyone else.
But that would be the trigger for people leaving, because at that point there's some real doubt about the legitimacy of the existing constitution.
Well, what's going to... How is Indiana... Federal troops, even National Guard troops, are, obedient to the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The President of the United States would still be in power even during an Article 5 convention.
Mm-hmm.
If the President chooses to enforce the new Constitution, the President federalizes the National Guard of that state, sends in federal troops, arrests the governor, who's trying to secede, and that's the end of it.
I think it depends. I mean, the scenario you're imagining in which a state tries to secede, I would agree. I'm not picturing that kind of thing. I'm picturing a voluntary breakup. Just give divorce a chance. That California says, we don't want to be involved in this mess, and the union says, you know what, go. We don't want to be involved with your mess.
I don't know. I don't see. I have difficulty picturing. It would be such a any president who would it'd be like. I don't know. I guess we came ultimately. You came very close to that with the UK, but any president who left would let a state secede. It'd be the end of that party.
Hmm.
And so for political reasons, I don't think they'd let it happen.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, like, if you have a Democratic president, and, sorry, Sam, to pick on Texas.
But no, just because
it is the most viable separate state. If Texas declared it was leaving and it wanted to go because it wanted because it was fed up with all these Supreme Court rulings saying that it couldn't punish the gays and... couldn't ban abortion and so on, and it wanted to leave for all these reasons that the Democrats aren't terribly sympathetic toward. I don't know that a Democratic politician would pay a price for saying, you know what, you guys just go. We don't want anything to do with you. Or conversely, if Massachusetts, let's say Maine, declared that it wanted to go join Canada because it wanted universal health care in the state of Maine, and it was a Republican president, and he said, you know what, if you guys want to do your crazy, kooky New England stuff in Canada rather than us, what I'm driving at is that the people who would be mad about it are the people who are already locked in to vote for that person. Mm-mm. No.
I would make a very effective smear campaign. You know, you'd show political campaign, Abraham Lincoln, and you have destroyed the legacy of Lincoln. You have allowed the Union to fall. No, that person's political career would be over. And I mean, even under people who vote Democrats, you still have, you know, you still have the people of New York City. They vote Democrat, but, you know, they're very patriotic in their own go F yourself way.
Well, say it's Trump, and Trump is elected, uh-huh. and Vermont declares that Vermont wants to go to Canada.
You know,
don't you think that Trump is going to turn around and say, I'm going to get a great deal for Vermont. I'm going to make Canada give us some money, and we're going to give them Vermont because Vermont's just a bunch of socialists anyway. Who, you know, forget them. I'm going to get some money, and we're going to take that money, and we're going to build a border fence.
No,
bunch of Trumpidians will totally back that plan?
What Trump's going to do is he's going to film on live TV as the U.S. Marshals round up all the secessionists and ship them to Canada. That's what he's going to do. He's going to round them up, and it'll be like the Red Scare things in the 1920s.
Reality TV presidency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to whenever he chooses his cabinet via an apprentice type model. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you're going to have like
celebrity cabinet.
Yeah. You're going to have like the people for DOD, they're all going to have to go. Everyone's going for Secretary of Defense is going to have to go through a mock boot camp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And commerce, they're going to be selling stuff at a roadside stand. Yeah.
The Department of Transportation, they're all going to have to take these driving tests at racing schools.
No,
you know?
It's going
to
be a road trip.
Oh.
Starting in D.C. all the way to California. And whoever makes it to California first becomes the next Department of Transportation.
Shouldn't it be Silver City, Nevada? What was that movie?
Rat Race. Education, I guess that's going to be a trivia show.
Surely based on the current state of the education system, it should be a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
We're going to use golf scorekeeping here.
Yes.
That's going to be what we're going to do.
And for Department of Interior, we're going to drop you off at a national park, and you have to survive on your own for like a month.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Have fun getting audited for the next 5 years.
Yeah. Especially under a Trump presidency where immigrants will be suspect.
Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah. I gotta start working on my Hoosier accent, huh?
I recommend saying wash more often.
Yeah, just say I gotta go wash it in the crick.
Yes. Yeah. I like crick, though. Crick's kind of nice. We talked on Facebook the other day about y'all. I am fully y'all appreciative. I think this is a good second person plural.
I appreciate y'all. I don't appreciate crick. Crick is mispronunciation.
Crick I'm okay with crick.
Okay.
I don't know why, but
you got a crick in your neck. You have a creek in your backyard.
Yeah. You know, it's nice. I like the Irish empt a lot as well.
How does that work?
Empt. Am not.
Oh.
I am going there.
Interesting.
Yeah. You
know, I think we need to go to the Irish and say, look, we have this great word, ain't.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like y'all could really use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so clever.
Yeah.
I don't use y'all a lot.
It really wasn't, but.
I don't use y'all a lot in conversation, but I use a lot online because it's usually more clear in person whether it's plural or singular, but in writing sometimes it's very useful to be able to make that distinction. There's a Texan Bible that uses y'all.
As it should.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, but it's very helpful sometimes to know whether it's individual or plural.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm in favor of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know a few English professors who are big fans of y'all.
Yeah, it's nice. It's
precisely because it's functional.
Yeah.
And not because they're Southerners.
Right.
It should be more widely adopted. If we've so what we've come out of so far in this podcast is that we should adopt y'all.
I say, how many parties are we now? Are you still technically a Republican? I mean, all because we should clarify, in Indiana, you don't actually register as anything, so there is no real visceral enjoyment of registering with a different party. But I, as far as I'm concerned, I am now an independent. Are you still technically a Republican?
Yeah, I think I'm still technically a Republican. I'm not jumping the party yet.
Okay.
We'll see.
Even if the party jumps the shark, Mike will not jump the party.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet. You know, we'll see after this election cycle. We'll see where things stand. But you know, one of the things that I'm questioning is, you know, as this was going along and as people were endorsing Trump. You know, I've been having this, well, I'm never going to vote for you. I'm never going to buy your stuff anymore, stuff like that. How far do we draw the line?
Well, I have a very clean line, which will not be of any use to you because you're still in it. But my line is very simple. Anyone who hasn't explicitly, any Republican who hasn't explicitly repudiated Trump, to my knowledge, will not get my vote.
Mm-hmm.
Period. You know, and it's not good enough to be mealy-mouthed about it. And this is, I think... this is what I had in mind when I said that it will be a disaster for the Republican Party, because the people who are anti-Trump will demand that kind of litmus test and will not vote for them if they don't provide it. But if they provide it, they will alienate the Trump people. And so either way, they're going to lose a good chunk of votes. And the Democrat will just, in any even marginally close race, the Democrat just steams through the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the problem I'm having is that we're not seeing too many people explicitly reject Trump.
Right.
Afterwards. I mean, you know, even, like, you know, the question is, like, Paul Ryan, mm-hmm. you know, one of my political heroes. And he's facing it with a difficult circumstance because he's the head, he's the chairman of the Republican National Convention. Mm-hmm. You know, ultimately, what I think he should do is resign that post.
I agree.
But, you know, he at the same time, he, from what I understand, he doesn't want to be the cause, the public cause of a split of the party, especially with also his role as Speaker of the House.
I mean, there is a scenario here, I mean, going back to the House of Cards option, where Paul Ryan becomes the next president of the United States as the compromise candidate in the House.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which would be, it's pie-in-the-sky stuff, but we're in a pie-in-the-sky year.
Well, here's my question, because I thought I read somewhere that the House picks someone from among the candidates.
I don't think that that's in the Constitution, but there may be something in the precedents. Of the House.
Yeah.
Because, so for example, the precedents say that each state votes by majority of its state delegation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a constitutional rule. It's a norm that is built up over time.
Mm-hmm.
But whether or not, it's not even a rule of the House, it's just a precedent. And whether mm-hmm. the House chooses to be bound by it,
mm-hmm.
who can tell? Do you guys remember the movie Elizabeth? Do you guys see that with, I think, Cate Blanchett and Jeffrey Rush?
I know
Rush?
What you're talking about, but I haven't seen it.
I can't remember what Bill it is, but Walsingham, played by Jeffrey Rush, and I don't know if this is historically accurate, but it's this kind of thing that Walsingham would have done, locks up a handful of lords in the dungeon until the vote has gone through. And I think, let's for sake of argument, say he's locked up six of them. And he comes down to let them out and says, oh, I'm terribly sorry about this inconvenience. It's all just a misunderstanding. And one of the lords says, oh, your bitch queen will never get this past Parliament. Oh, it's already passed, my lords, by five. He just gives them a telling look and walks off. So, you know, I mean, you know, we've seen legislators in the last few years flee the state.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the Indiana and Wisconsin people fled to Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and so you know, who knows what the House Democratic Caucus might do in that kind of situation, or for that matter, the House Republican Caucus. Maybe the House of Representatives, all by mutual consent, all just run the hell home and refuse to meet. It's just like, nope, we're not electing any of these people.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there is a rule, or I'm sorry, a precedent that they have to pick from among the people already in play, they could disregard it. You know, it's not a rule of the house, as far as I know, and it's not a constitutional requirement. So they should follow the precedents, but I would say that as a conservative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do we want to talk about to wrap up?
I think robot sex is an excellent topic.
Oh, Christ on the
robot sex. Any other news in robot sex?
Oh, jeez.
No, I just wanted to bring it up.
You just wanted to bring it up, yes. Yep. Yes. Simon is now, what shade would you say he is?
Let's say magenta.
Magenta? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he feels maroon.
Yeah, I'm a maroon. Yeah. Did you get in that pre-order?
Yeah, the Scarlett Johansson model was looking surprisingly realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that and I was like, wow, this guy really put a lot of effort into making sure the face was very, very close.
But isn't it a wonderful demonstration of the uncanny valley thing that Mike's talked about, though? Because it really was very close until you saw the video. And it's just like, whoa, no. Oh, no. No, no.
I don't know. Something tells me that most people won't care. Yeah, speaking of which, it looks like Scarlett Johansson might get her own standalone Black Widow movie.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Which would be awesome. And why has this not happened yet? I don't even need a plot. Right, I will happily watch her kick ass for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Again. You know. It's just that before we had to watch her for a half hour here and a half hour there, you know. And now we can just have all of that together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one movie. It'll be nice.
Yeah, hopefully they'd make it like a decent, real spy movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's crying out for that kind of genre movie.
Yeah.
Something that's not set in the Cold War, but it has some of the callbacks to Cold War era spycraft.
Yeah, exactly.
Would be nice.
I suppose nowadays you could do it, and this would work well for their international market thing. You could have a spy movie with regards to China, perhaps, or some other, you know, some China stand-in. You know, I don't know. North Korea. I don't know. North Korea's not really a worthy adversary, though.
Yeah, is that too easy?
Well, I think she'd stand out spying in North Korea.
You could do it in Russia.
I think doing it, you know, like she has to find there's someone from her school who's in trouble.
Go back to confront her past.
One of the girls in the ballet school she was enrolled in has gone rogue or something like that. And so she's got to go in and rescue them.
Hmm. I'd watch the hell out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, when they announced the Phase 3 slate without a Black Widow movie, I made some rhetorical point about, I can't remember what I said, but you know, I was annoyed that there was no Black Widow movie because obviously by the time they're done with Phase 3 in 2020, Scarlett Johansson will be, oh crap, she's still only going to be like 30-something. I mean, she's not going to be too old to do a Black Widow solo movie in Phase 4 because she's, I mean, what is she, like 27, 28? She's very young,
mm-hmm.
like unspeakably young. Like, who the hell is that young?
Only for you.
Huh?
Only for you. She's my age.
Oh, she is? Okay. Well, you're a fit guy. I mean, you know, I could imagine you doing a martial arts movie in a few years.
If I wanted to act. I mean, I have done acting in the past,
but I
wasn't exactly winning awards for my acting. In my
Japanese language video was amazing.
Yeah, it was quite kawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of the fanboys will get what I said.
I didn't. They'll have it on T-shirts and everything.
Yeah.
All right, we want to call it.
Yeah, I think my acting career is a good place to let it die.
Okay.